British Sky Broadcasting presents The Illusionist, starring Edward Norton as Eisenheim, Paul Giamatti as the Detective Chief Inspector, Jessica Biel as Sophie, and Rufus Sewell as Crown Prince Leopold, also starring Eddie Marson, Jake Wood, Tom Fisher, and Aaron Johnson. The music is by Philip Glass. The director is Neil Berger, and the audio description is written and voiced by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. Bleary black-and-white pictures of gentlemen and ladies in clothes from the turn of the 19th century, walking along cobbled streets in a city with elegant stone buildings. Horse-drawn carriages pass by. A man stands on the stage of a theatre, in formal evening clothes, addressing a packed audience. A group of people walk through a stark forest of tall trees. A chair on an empty stage. A parchment shows an intricate diagram of something. A small wooden chalet stands alone on grassland, with a mountain in the background, a blurred face in close-up. Now a man with black hair and a black goatee-type beard sits on the chair on the stage, head bowed as if concentrating. To his right, there's a curtain box big enough for a person to step into. The man's hands rest on the legs of his black trousers. He wears a black waistcoat over a tieless white shirt with sleeves rolled up. He sits motionless, rivulets of sweat forming on his forehead. He's the illusionist. At the front of the stage, between him and an attentive audience, a row of flaming lanterns flicker. At the rear of the theatre, uniformed policemen stand, their silver buttons glistening. Their helmets have a spike on the top. Among the audience that looks transfixed, a man with a balding head and a full black beard stares at the stage, looking a little cautious and uneasy. At the side of the stage, a ghostly mist starts to form.
It's her! I know it's her! Everyone, she wants to tell us something! We must do something! Please!
We must tell her! To the front!
The balding man with the full black beard steps onto the stage. His uniformed policemen walk to the front of the theatre.
In the name of His Imperial Majesty and the City of Vienna, I hereby arrest Edward Abramowitz, also known as Eisenheim the Illusionist, on charges of disturbing public order, charlatanism, and threats against the Empire!
They're arresting Kim! They're arresting Eisenheim!
A crowd waiting outside the theatre surge inside, brushing away a doorman. Now the black-bearded chief inspector strides along a corridor with walls lined with antlers, stuffed heads and other hunting trophies. His expression is grim. A courtier opens a door and announces his presence.
Chief Inspector Uhl.
Inspector Uhl walks into a large wood-paneled office with walls lined with books. He faces an imposing bearded man behind a heavy desk.
You're late.
My apologies, Your Highness. I was attending to the loose ends of the case.
Are there still loose ends?
Very few.
Did he do it again? How does he do it?
I'm afraid I still don't know.
Did you ask him?
He's not talking at this point.
Well, I'm sure you have methods for that kind of thing. I want you to put an end to it. Surely you have something on him? Something from his past?
Yes. Yes, I think I do.
A flashback to the time when the illusionist was a boy helping his father to make furniture.
In fact, we know all about his life. We've spoken to almost everyone who ever knew him.
The curly-headed boy walks along a lane flanked by a field of crops and a meadow.
As a boy, I'm told he had a chance encounter with a traveling magician.
The magician, old with a wide-brimmed black hat, sits under a tree.
Boy.
The boy pauses. With a flourish of his hand, the magician produces a toad from the boy's ear. Staring at the boy with his old red eyes, the magician grips the toad in his hand and then pulls out a rose on a stem. The boy's eyes widen. Then the magician gives the rose a shake and it turns into a flute which floats away.
One version of the story was that the man himself then vanished, along with the tree. Who knows what actually happened?
Sitting beside his bed at home, the boy practices magic. He makes a small red ball disappear from his hand and reappear under his leg.
People began to think he had some kind of special power, or at least that he was a bit different.
In a street, he balances an egg on a thin stick.
And then he met her.
Haughty-looking young people on horseback pause as he balances the egg. A girl smiles at him.
Don't drop it.
Careful, you're going to trip.
Drop it, you mucksnipe.
Oh, watch out for that hole, alley rat.
Drop it!
Come on.
The girl follows him under an archway towards a river. Now they kneel on the floor of his parents' humble cottage. He shows the girl a card trick.
Pick a card.
She picks an eight of hearts.
Put it back in the deck.
She places the card in the middle of the pack.
Now watch.
The eight of hearts rises vertically from the deck and floats in the air. The boy grabs the card as the door bursts open.
Duchess von Teschen, you can't be in a place like this. They're peasants. Remember who you are.
The girl is taken away in an open horse-drawn carriage. Her horse trots behind, tethered on a rope. In a street lined with traders selling their wares, the boy runs after her for some of the way. She looks back and they share a glance.
She was brought back to the castle and they were forbidden to see each other. But soon they were doing just that. Over the next few years, they could always find a way to be together.
Quick, come on.
They run to a stone-built shack in a forest.
In China, there's a magician who can make anything disappear. A house, a wagon, anything.
We'll go visit him. They can't stop us if we want to be together.
They'll never find us.
You promise you'll take me with you?
One day I will.
One day. We'll run away together. We'll disappear.
She kisses him on the cheek. He looks surprised, but pleased. He gives her a kiss on the lips. Next, he labours away in his father's workshop, following an intricate design for a locket. The next time they meet, he presses the locket on a piece of string into her hand as she waits expectantly with her blue eyes closed.
There's a secret way to open it.
He shows her. When the locket is opened, she sees there is a photograph of him inside.
I wanted a picture.
She kisses it, staring into his green eyes. Later at night, 2 feet trudge over fallen leaves in the forest. They belong to the boy, who holds a lantern and pulls a mule on a rope behind him. He arrives at their secret place, the stone shack.
Sophie, are you there?
We must hurry. They're coming. Make us disappear. Make us disappear.
He shuts his eyes.
Stop.
Sophie!
Stay away from her, or next time we'll arrest you and your family.
What happened next remains a mystery. We do know that he traveled the world, that he began to perform his magic in public, that he changed his name to Eisenheim. And then, almost 15 years later, he appeared in Vienna.
A grand theatre of stone with elegant carved statues. People queue outside, on stage.
Life and death. Space and time. Fate and chance. These are the forces of the universe. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you a man who has unlocked these mysteries. From the furthest corners of the world, where the dark arts still hold sway, he returns to us to demonstrate how nature's laws may be bent. I give you Eisenheim.
Eisenheim takes off his gloves. He tosses them into the audience, and they turn into flying crows.
Might I borrow a handkerchief from someone?
A woman holds up her white hanky.
You, madam.
He steps down to the second row holding a small box. He takes the embroidered handkerchief and pops it inside the box and closes it. He hands the box to the woman who tries to have a peep inside.
Thank you. Ah, be patient. Now, if you please, I would like to continue with an examination of time. From the moment we enter this life, we are in the flow of it. We measure it and we mark it, but we cannot defy it. We cannot even speed it up or slow it down. Or can we? Have we not each experienced the sensation that a beautiful moment seemed to pass too quickly and wished that we could make it linger? Or felt time slow on a dull day and wished that we could speed things up a bit?
He slices the orange in two and plucks out a pip with his fingers. He holds the tiny pip between his thumb and forefinger before placing it in an empty tub on a table center stage. Staring at the audience, he hovers his left palm over the tub. He closes his eyes and slowly lifts his hand higher. The empty tub now contains soil, and a green shoot starts to rise from it. The theatre is almost full. Most people are in formal evening dress. Inspector Uhl is among them. He shifts in his seat, staring in fascination as the green shoot blossoms into an orange tree with ripe oranges growing on it. He takes two oranges from the tree.
I assure you, they're quite real.
Is it real?
And you, madam, where is your handkerchief?
The portly lady in a big hat opens the box and, looking amazed, shows it to the people sitting nearby. It's empty. Fluttering across the stage towards the stalls are two butterflies, each holding one end of the hanky. The audience get to their feet. Eisenheim extends his arms and gives a discreet bow. The police inspector can't contain himself. Street urchins.
Give us something, please. Please, give us something. Please.
What's all this?
We're poor.
Do you think you're poor?
Yes.
A rag.
I want to show you something. You're not poor. You have everything that you need right here.
Coins appear.
And that's yours. And this too.
They scramble after more coins.
Look at the magic one.
In the theatre's coffee shop, he meets his manager, Joseph, who introduces the stage show. He's sitting with strudels, coffee and a newspaper.
Good morning.
Good morning. Coffee?
No.
Strudel, I have two.
Nothing, thank you. You look very pleased with yourself. How are the receipts?
Not bad, a three-quarter house.
Well done.
But we're going to do better than that. Listen to this. Listen. There is no argument that his uncanny displays separate him from the ranks of garden variety stage wizards. Some of his effects transcend mere illusion and approach the realm of art. He is very young to be so masterful. You see? We'll pack the house with this review. We are going to make more money than you ever dreamed of.
If it was mechanical, maybe he had it wrapped in some kind of bar.
Oh, of course I thought of that. It's the butterflies I'm trying to work out.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Invisible wire. Oh,
too obvious. How many men have you detailed for tonight?
We have 8 men inside, another 8 out front.
Perhaps you'll get another look at your butterflies.
Uhl eats at his desk. Later, the lights are switched on at the empty theatre. Three uniformed policemen check around the seats. Inspector Uhl and a detective go backstage to examine the props. The inspector takes off his trilby and peers with a smile into the tub from which the orange tree grew.
Put that
Eisenheim.
Down. Who are you and what do you think you're doing?
I'm Chief Inspector Walter Uhl, and I'm inspecting your theatre. I've seen you perform. It was very impressive. Very impressive.
How can we help you, Inspector?
You will be honoured to know that the Crown Prince plans to attend your performance tonight.
The Crown Prince?
Yes. So, obviously, we have to inspect the theatre.
I think that one's a bit small for an assassin, don't you?
As the orange tree. I have seen things like this before, but never one like that. Extraordinary.
Thank you.
I have been puzzling over how it works, especially how the butterflies fly. I assure you, your secret is safe with me. I'm an officer of the law, after all, and a bit of an amateur conjurer.
Are you really?
Yes. Well, card tricks, coins, sleight of hand, yes. But nothing fancy. Perhaps you'll give me a tip.
Yes, all right. I'll show you one I'm very fond of. Are you a gambling man?
On occasion, yes.
I will bet you the secret of the orange tree that I can guess which hand you place this in every time.
Excellent.
Put it in your fist. Raise your hand against your forehead. Concentrate on it. Form a mental picture.
Yes.
Have you got it?
Yes.
Put your hands in front of you.
Eisenheim turns to face him.
It's in your left.
Well.
A lucky guess, perhaps.
You have a confederate who signals you.
No. It's more primitive than that. Huh? When you raise your hand to your head, the blood drains from it. It will be paler every time.
Oh, I like that very much.
Please take it, with my compliments.
Well, thank you. The plan drains.
Now, Inspector, if you don't mind, I've got to prepare for tonight's performance.
Later, as people wait outside, a detective is checking behind the stage curtains. Joseph paces. Joseph peeps through the curtains at the royal box. The Crown Prince takes his seat, and the others in his party sit down. It's a packed house. Time passes. Some magic trick has just been done, and an assistant whips a drape away, revealing an empty chair. The Crown Prince claps politely. Eisenheim strolls onto the stage.
I thought we might end this evening with a discussion of the soul. All of the greatest religions speak of the soul's endurance beyond the end of life. So what then does it mean to die? I need a volunteer from the audience. Someone not afraid of death. Please. Someone. I assure you, no tragedy will befall you.
The Crown Prince stands, indicating that the others in his box should remain seated. He extends his arm towards a duchess who sits on his left. She gets up. In the wings, Joseph shares a look with Eisenheim. Assistants bring a tall mirror onto the stage as the duchess walks from the royal box, followed by a courtier. Joseph extends his hand and greets her.
It's an honor, Duchess.
Eisenheim stares at her curiously as she walks onto the stage. She's about his age, fresh-faced and pretty. They hold each other's gaze.
Do you know me?
No.
You're quite certain that we've never met before?
Yes, of course.
The magician nods. An assistant brings a scarlet cloak and drapes it on her.
Now please gaze directly into my eyes. Look nowhere else.
The Duchess follows his instructions. He takes a deep breath and places an outstretched hand in front of her face. His eyes becoming tense as he lowers the hand and her eyes close. The Crown Prince shifts in his seat. Eisenheim stands the Duchess in front of the tall mirror and places the hood of the cloak over her head. He steps away.
Wave to yourself.
The mirror reflects her wave.
Turn in a circle.
She turns all the way round and faces the mirror again.
Now bow to yourself.
She bows, but the reflection stays upright and crosses its arms. In the mirror, another figure in a scarlet cloak appears and brings a sword down on the Duchess's reflection. The Duchess steps back in alarm as she sees her reflected figure collapse. Inspector Uhl looks uneasy. Eisenheim spreads out his fingers before the mirror. A ghostly mist rises up from the reflected figure. Crown Prince Leopold sits upright in his seat. The eerie mist comes right out of the mirror and above the head of the real Duchess.
away.
She faints, and Eisenheim rushes to catch her. He studies her confused face and nods. She returns the nod. He takes off her cloak, and she leaves the stage. Through the mirror, the audience is seen to stand and applaud. Eisenheim gives a salute as the Duchess walks back to the royal box. In his dressing room, Eisenheim takes off his jacket and rubs his face with a handkerchief. Now it is he who looks confused and deeply thoughtful. He shakes his head. He passes a police guard to join the royal party for drinks. There are men in uniform with medals. An aristocratic woman the Duchess is talking to stares at him, and then the Duchess stares. Joseph steps over to him in the doorway.
They must have liked it. They waited for you nearly 5 minutes. Your Highness, may I introduce Eisenheim the Illusionist?
The Crown Prince shakes his hand.
Well done.
Thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, we more than enjoyed it. Stimulated great debate amongst us, hasn't it? Except, of course, for your assistant, Duchess von Teschen. You seem to have struck her quite speechless. Feat in itself. Did you hypnotize her?
In a fashion.
I'd like to learn that trick. Reiner here thinks you have supernatural powers. Do you claim supernatural powers?
I've never said anything of that kind.
Then you won't mind a question or two.
No, let's not ruin it.
I needn't divulge anything I can't guess.
As you wish.
Your assistants are behind the mirror somewhere, in robes, obviously. Lights in the frame, perhaps, to illuminate them, or angled mirrors.
That would be one way to do it.
I think I understand it all except the ghost. That was very, very good.
Another viewing, perhaps?
You must come to the Hofburg next time. We'll make an evening of it.
That will be my pleasure.
So be it. Sophie?
The Duchess takes the arm of Leopold.
We'll gather our best minds next time. We really have a challenge then.
Then I'll prepare something special. Perhaps I'll make you disappear.
Sophie the Duchess stares hard at him, as if trying to remember something as they leave. Joseph and Eisenheim walk away from the theater along a cobbled street.
My God, when he volunteered her, I heard the crashing sound of money falling on me in piles. Every lady of means in Vienna will want to get up there with you now. Mm. What a show-off. His father would have died if he'd seen such a display.
She didn't seem too happy about it either.
Well, she'd better get used to it.
How's that?
Word is she'll marry him soon.
Really?
Taking her chances, if you ask me.
Why?
He likes to give his lady friends a good thrashing now and again. People say he pushed one of them off a balcony just to cover the beating he'd given her.
Eisenheim lowers his eyes in disdain. Inside his substantial house later, he sits alone in his workshop, whittling away at a piece of wood. His eyes now seem miles away. It's daylight. A uniformed courier strides across the cobbled road to the theatre door. He delivers a letter with a red seal. An assistant takes it to Eisenheim, who is with another man in the backstage props room. Next, a carriage pulled by two black horses. Eisenheim sits inside. He peers from the carriage window as the horses are brought to a halt next to another carriage, which is waiting. The Duchess Sophie climbs from the waiting carriage into the one where Eisenheim sits. She taps on the window to signal the driver to move off.
Hello, Sophie.
When I was on the stage, you knew me right away.
It took me a moment, but... yes, I knew.
Could have said something.
I thought you'd figure it out eventually.
Yes, I would have. I would have come another night, volunteered, walked right on stage and said hello, and then you'd really have had to move quickly.
I suspect you would have.
I don't understand why.
Perhaps for the same reasons you find it prudent to meet in a carriage.
It's just a game I have to play with them. I'm followed everywhere. It's supposed to be for my protection.
Yes. So, I hear congratulations are in order.
What for?
They say you'll be the princess.
It's not decided at all. Oh. It makes a certain sense, I suppose. We've known each other for years, and of course, our families. He's very intelligent. A little too intelligent for his own good. You're lucky, you know. To have broken free as you did. I often wish that I had.
Wished what?
Wish that I would see you again.
And now you have.
Carriage stops.
I look forward to seeing you again at the Hofburg.
Until then.
He gets out. Sophie leans back with a wistful look. She pulls up a locket she's wearing. It's the locket Eisenheim made for her when they were young teenagers. A detective enters the inspector's office and hands him a file.
Report on Duchess Fontaine.
Anything interesting?
See for yourself.
The magician?
They drove around for half an hour, then he got out near the theatre. What do you want us to do?
As Eisenheim heads towards the theatre, a detective catches up and walks alongside him. Eisenheim looks puzzled. A second detective comes from behind a wall and walks on the other side of him.
Join us for a drink?
He's led to a cafe where Inspector Uhl is having lunch.
Please.
The inspector beckons for him to join him at his table. Eisenheim sits down.
Would you like something to eat, something to drink?
No, thank you.
Eisenheim, I'm going to ask you a question that may not seem friendly, but I assure you, in fact, is. What is your relationship with the Duchess von Teschen?
You're right, that doesn't seem friendly.
Oh, but that is precisely my point. For, you see, where others might judge a discreet carriage ride for what it seemed to be, I am willing to find out what it actually was.
All right. We were childhood acquaintances.
Acquaintances?
Childhood friends. My father was a cabinet maker. He made the furniture for her family's house.
I see. The cabinet maker's son, friends with the...
Has there been a complaint?
Oh, no, no. If there'd been a complaint, no, we'd be having a very different sort of conversation.
Yes. He relies on you for that sort of thing, does he?
I'm a simple public servant, Eisenheim.
That's not what I hear. I hear you'll be the chief of police very soon. Maybe mayor of Vienna, party secretary.
All subject to his whim.
You better hope he doesn't dissolve the parliament before you get there.
The prince has some progressive ideas, but he will make a fine emperor.
Well, they say you're very close to him, so I'm sure you'll do fine.
Look. Yes, indeed, they say that I'm very close to the prince. But the simple truth of the matter is, Herr Eisenheim, I'm the son of a butcher. He's the heir to the empire. How close could we be to such as him? You see my point?
Ul looks him straight in the eye.
Don't fool yourself that you can play in their game. I've served on the edge of it for many, many years. And I can tell you with certainty, there's no trick they haven't seen. It's not worth it.
Carriages wait outside the high railings of the palatial palace. Inside...
My guest tonight is not a showman at all, but rather a wizard who has sold his soul to the devil in return for unholy powers. Or so at least some of our friends here would have us believe. But fear not. Everything can and will be explained. All mysteries penetrated.
Here, here. Well said. Well
said. In a grand hall of VIPs, Leopold takes his seat next to Sophie and reaches for a drink. Eisenheim turns to an easel. He flourishes his hand over the blank canvas within a picture frame, and a sketch starts to draw itself. Soon a stern-looking elderly man with a full beard fills the canvas.
Is that the Emperor?
Ah, yes, your father.
I didn't think he was invited.
Leopold gets to his feet with a hand on the sword that hangs from his waist.
A fair likeness of the old man. Too modern a style for him, of course.
I'm afraid I'm not much of a painter.
It's true. There are no brushstrokes in this painting. I can see that very clearly. So to achieve the color, some sort of chemical must be interacting, presumably some sort of sprayer up your sleeve. Yeah?
If you feel you must.
I do.
Oh, let the man do his show.
You want me to just sit there when it's so obvious?
I do.
He tries to trick you. I try to enlighten you. Which is the more noble pursuit?
May we have the lights, please? So His Highness can better see.
See here, Leopold. Let's have the show.
Here, here.
Come on, Leopold.
Get on with it.
Very well. I propose a challenge. Why don't you astonish us, if you can, without all the gadgetry?
As you wish. Your sword is very beautiful. Might I see it?
Certainly.
May I? Where does power flow from? Skill or destiny? Or divine right? We all know the story of a sword called Excalibur. Excalibur's blade was fixed in stone.
He rests the sword point down on the floor.
And there it stayed. Many worthy knights tried to pull the sword from the stone. Only Arthur succeeded, proving his right to rule. Who can take this sword? You, sir. Can you take the sword?
Inspector Ul watches intrigued, along with the rest, as an elderly man in military uniform steps to the front and tries to pull up the sword without success. He gives up and bows to the Crown Prince.
No surprise there.
Perhaps you, sir.
Not so eager, cousin.
A young officer tries to wrench the sword up. He uses both hands, grimacing, but fails.
We shall live a long life.
Thank you for your indulgence.
Now Leopold steps over to collect his sword. When he can't shift it, he throws a menacing look at Eisenheim. Sophie looks worried.
Come now, if you can't pull it out, you'll never be emperor.
Your father will live to be 100.
The sword to its rightful owner.
That's enough light entertainment for this evening. For a more serious discussion, please join me for a drink.
Gould nervously runs a finger over his beard.
Shut him down.
Well, he's very...
Leopold strides on ahead. Sophie approaches Eisenheim.
What did you do to him?
I gave him what he asked for.
What would possess you to do something so foolish?
Duchess Fontesha, you must come along, my dear. We don't want to keep the prince waiting. Did you enjoy the show?
Under a black sky, lights are on at Eisenheim's house. He fiddles with a saucepan in his workshop and throws it down, looking frustrated and angry with himself. A figure on a white horse gallops through a forest towards the magician's house. Eisenheim leaves his workshop with a hammer in his hand and walks outside. It's Sophie on the horse. She pulls the animal to a halt.
Told you where to find me.
Your manager. I told him if you want to stay in Vienna, you need my help.
Ah, so I'm to be driven from the city, is that it? Good. I shall relish it.
Stop it! I came here to try to help you.
Why? Why should you possibly care what happens to me now?
You are my friend. I am your friend.
We knew each other very briefly. A long time ago, you don't know me at all.
Then why did you speak to me?
He turns and kisses her lovingly on the mouth. She doesn't resist. They go inside and she tries to kiss him. He stops her with a hand to her lips. He presses her against a wall and they gaze, wanting each other. She starts to unbutton his shirt. He starts to unbutton her blouse. He whips open the front of the blouse and above her frilly bra, he sees the locket he made for her, resting over her cleavage. They kiss and embrace passionately and fall onto his bed where they tenderly explore each other's bodies. Gaze at each other lovingly with a different passion, a passion that comes from fulfillment. He fingers the locket around her neck.
And you kept it all this time?
I used to sit and stare at your picture, try to imagine where you were. At night, I'd have dreams I'd gone with you.
She smiles and rubs her fingers over his neat black beard. He smiles too.
But in my dreams you had shorter hair and no beard.
She rests her head on his naked chest and snuggles in.
Where did you go when you left?
To my uncle's farm near Prague.
How exotic.
I went to Russia, then Asia Minor, and then the Orient for many years.
So long.
I was meant to return. I kept thinking I'd find it around the next corner.
What?
A real mystery. I saw remarkable things. But the only mystery I never solved was why my
heart... He kisses her hand, and they gaze into each other's eyes. He stokes up the log fire as she lies in the bed. The flickering flames cast a rosy glow on her face. A tear runs down her cheek.
He wants me to go to Budapest with him next week to announce our engagement. He wants the Hungarians behind him. They're going to crown him king.
I'm sure his father will have something to say about that.
Plans to overthrow his father.
That could go very badly for him. And for you. You shouldn't be involved.
I am part of his plan. He only gets hungry by aligning himself with my family.
Leave him.
It's not that easy.
Call it off and come away with me. Or don't say anything and we'll just go.
As long as we're alive, he'll hunt us.
The magician ponders as he looks at her. Her rosy cheeks match the color of her lips. Her blue eyes are vibrant but sad.
Look at me. Do you truly want to leave with me?
Yes.
He nods and lowers his eyes deep in thought. In the daylight, he walks to the theatre. He stops and walks back a few steps to where his billboards have been ripped away. He looks down to see pieces of the torn posters on the pavement. He goes backstage to find two assistants and Joseph packing up.
There you are. As I predicted, they've shut us down. Are you happy now? You made your point? It doesn't matter that we were sold out for the whole run. No, no. You got it off your chest.
Do we have money?
What?
We have any money saved?
Yes, we have some, but we could have had much, much more.
It will have to do.
At the bank, Eisenheim loads his briefcase with notes. A small bottle containing red liquid is wrapped carefully in a cloth. Along with other items, it is placed in a small suitcase. Holding the suitcase, Eisenheim walks over a large cobbled square under the gaze of a tall statue. He crosses in front of two chestnut horses pulling a carriage. Another man walks behind him, watching and keeping his distance. As Eisenheim passes a row of waiting carriages, the man following him peers from behind a stone pillar. He's one of Inspector Uhl's men. He watches the magician approach one of the carriages. The door opens and he places the case inside. A woman leans out and takes his hand. It's Sophie. The two of them kiss. The detective watches keenly.
And you have no doubt it was Duchess von Teschen.
I'd stake my life on it, huh?
What next, Uhl struggles along a train station platform.
I don't know.
He pretends to be reading a newspaper as he sidles up to a plainclothes officer. Uhl walks on, trying to look inconspicuous with his pipe in his mouth and staring down at his newspaper. Passengers are getting on and off the waiting train. The inspector lifts his eyes to study faces. He spots Eisenheim greeting an older man with a full beard and hides behind a partition to eavesdrop.
Matt will show you where to meet.
When it's done, you'll travel ahead with her, and I shall follow.
And she understands everything this entails.
Completely. There's not a lot of time. But
As you know, we sometimes follow Duchess von Teschen for her protection. Yesterday, she was seen in the company of another man.
What man?
Arsenheim, the illusionist.
What were they doing?
Well, they were meeting and,
touching? Kissing? Fornicating?
Not that we observed, no. However, I have reason to believe that they may be planning something together. It's possible they may be leaving. I'm not certain of anything yet, Your Highness.
Thank you, Inspector.
All flinches as Leopold fires his gun. He regains his composure and bows before putting his hat back on. He leaves the royal presence. As the sun is going down, Sophie rides into the courtyard of the Imperial Hunting Lodge. A courtier takes her horse. She jumps down and is escorted along the corridor lined with hunting trophies.
Spent the afternoon in Vienna with his father.
She paces on the expensive rugs in the tastefully decorated wood-paneled office of the Crown Prince. Later, she gets up from her seat as Leopold arrives, looking unsteady on his feet. In uniform, with his sword at his side, he sits at a table and pulls the decanter of brandy towards him. She sits as he pours himself a drink.
What a surprise. Thought you didn't like it here. I suppose you think you're very clever. Very democratic in your friendships, aren't you?
What are you talking about?
Your magician friend. I know you've been with him.
It's true. We've been friends since childhood.
You sleep with all your childhood friends?
I will not be spoken to this way.
You'll be spoken to as I wish to speak to you.
You're drunk.
You're getting quite old, aren't you? You know, my mother was 16 years old when she married my father. And you, can you even bear children? Are you any use at all? Are you trying to embarrass me?
It has nothing to do with you.
It has everything to do with me! You will not share my bed if you have slept with him!
Understand. I'm not going to share your bed at all. I'm not going to Budapest with you. I don't want to be part of what you're planning. And I will not marry you.
I assume you haven't been so stupid as to tell him anything. Because if you disrupt my plans, I will have no further use for you, do you understand? Now, you will travel to Budapest tomorrow. I recommend that you're here early, packed and ready to go. Do nothing more to embarrass me.
Goodbye.
What do you mean, goodbye?
He knocks over a chair, rushing to the door.
Come back here.
He follows her down the stairs. The courtier crosses to a window and sees her running in the courtyard towards the stables. The courtier sees him stumbling after her with a hand on his sword handle. The courtier looks shocked. He keeps looking and sees Sophie's white horse trotting away with her slumped on it with her head down. A guard moves out of the way as the horse trots past him and out of the grounds. At his house, Eisenheim and his assistants are packing things away.
No, leave that.
Eisenheim moves to a table and checks a pocket watch. It's nearly 5:50. He looks a little concerned and steps outside. He looks into the woodland. There's no sign of anybody. He looks the other way. There's no movement. He pushes his hands deep into his trouser pockets and steps back to the house. Sophie's white horse trots along a pavement. There is no rider in the saddle. A passing businessman with a walking stick stops and stares. The horse plods on to the gates of the royal palace, where it halts. A man in a top hat opens the gates and stares in shock at a bloodstain on the horse's side. A line of searchers with long sticks and tracker dogs comb the forest. Eisenheim is among the searchers. A man with a dog stares into a river. There is a figure caught on a fallen tree in the water. Three men stare from the bank. With a look of alarm, Eisenheim comes rushing down to the water's edge, whips off his coat, and leaps straight in. He reaches the figure as other searchers arrive and stare from the bank. It is Sophie. He cradles her in his arms and sees bloodstains on her neck. Looking deeply distressed, he covers his face with a hand. He strokes her face and kisses her pale cheek. A horse-drawn carriage trundles alongside the river towards the scene. A detective greets the carriage, from which Uhl emerges. He throws the detective an angry glance.
I thought you saw her get on the train with him.
No, sir. We were waiting in Vienna for them, but they left from Baden. We assumed she was with him. Should I wire the Crown Prince in Budapest?
It's been done.
Who are you?
I'm the family's doctor. Hmm. Are you the chief inspector?
Yes, I am. You understand this is a police matter now?
Of course I understand.
Good, good. You have determined the cause of death?
She bled to death. There's a wound on her throat, just above the left collarbone. Perhaps from a knife or a sword.
Uhl moves away a blanket covering Sophie's neck, revealing a nasty, bloody wound. He checks for a neck pulse and then a wrist pulse. A detective lifts the other end of the blanket, covering her boots.
Inspector, I will not stand for it. The Crown Prince will not stand for it. This is not some circus sideshow.
My apologies, of course. Thank you, Doctor.
Probably robbed. Gypsies, maybe.
Saw all those diamonds. Couldn't say no.
Chief Inspector, there's one thing you should know.
Yes, what is that?
In the folds of her dress, I found this.
Uhl studies the small red gem. Eisenheim looks desolate as the carriage containing the body pulls away. Uhl and his men have a confab.
Seen last Thursday at 7:30 p.m. riding without an escort toward the Imperial Hunting Lodge. Groomsman said she arrived about 8:30.
Eisenheim strides over.
What was she doing riding alone?
He did this. You know he did.
I know who did what?
The Crown Prince. He killed her. He's done it before and you know it.
Oh, I don't know that. In fact, I'm sure he didn't. He's in Budapest.
He killed her before he left.
I'm afraid the facts don't support your theory.
She was leaving him.
For who? You? Don't
yes.
be absurd, Herr Eisenheim.
He killed her because he couldn't let her go. She knew his secret.
What secret?
Ask your inspector, he knows.
Stop this right now!
Are you completely corrupt?
No, not completely, no.
Which is why I'll advise you not to accuse anyone, especially His Imperial Highness.
Eisenheim looks distressed and dazed as the detectives walk away. Inspector Uhl looks deep in thought as horses pull his carriage into the Imperial Hunting Lodge.
Where's the guard who let her out of the gate?
Gone with the Crown Prince.
Did any of the servants see her leave?
All asleep.
What about him?
They enter the stables, followed by the courtier.
This one?
We don't have jurisdiction on Imperial property.
Thank you, I know.
So what are you doing?
Investigating.
Not listening to that magician, are you? For all we know, he did it.
No, I think not.
Uhl sees something sparkle in the straw.
Back.
Outside, he walks with Leopold.
Now?
What have you found out?
She was last seen riding here alone.
Yes, and based on your information, I then threw her out too. Did she commit suicide?
No, it was surely murder.
Do you have a suspect?
We will soon, Your Highness. Later that week, we arrested a man and charged him with murder. But I knew that that wouldn't satisfy Eisenheim.
As a butterfly flutters in his room, Eisenheim sits with arms firmly crossed. Next, a theater with a grand stone exterior.
He finally emerged from his grief.
Wagon wheels trundle along an alley to the back entrance of the new theatre.
He fired his manager and began preparing for a new kind of show.
He unlocks the back of the wagon and a group of Orientals get out. They lift wooden chests into the theatre's back entrance. Eisenheim glances around furtively and follows them in, closing the door behind him. Green curtains open to reveal a table and a chair on the stage. A pair of highly polished shoes stride from the wings. They belong to Eisenheim, who sits on the chair, placing his hands on the legs of his black trousers. With narrowed eyes, he stares intently into the distance. A breeze springs up and fans the flames in the lanterns towards the audience, who sit in the semi-dark, looking spellbound. Eisenheim points the palm of his left hand towards the table. From the glass tabletop, an eerie mist starts to form and rise up. It's a packed house, and all eyes concentrate on the mist as it starts to take on human form. Uhl and the detective sitting next to him stare transfixed. The bust of a young man forms on the tabletop. He has a centre parting. He wears a shirt and a jacket, and he looks alarmed and confused.
Who is he?
My name is Frankel.
Where did you come from?
I come from Brunn. My father is a lens grinder there.
How have you come to be here tonight?
I don't know.
Are you alive?
What can you tell us about the other side? What's it like?
Yes, tell us.
Eisenheim points his palm again, and the apparition fades away. People pour from the theatre filled with awe about what they've seen. The inspector watches a group flock to the stage door. He turns to the detective who walks beside him.
They don't seem to think it's a trick.
In the street, people stop and stare at the illusionist.
Eisenheim's audience had always been enthusiastic, but now he is attracting a more...
As he approaches the theatre the next day, he sees a small crowd has gathered. In a shop doorway, a detective smokes a cigar and observes. The crowd make a pathway for Eisenheim. In his next performance, he produces another manifestation, the ghostly figure of a boy. Uhl is in the audience again. A woman volunteer steps onto the stage. She touches the boy. Her hand goes straight through him.
With these spirits, these manifestations, Eisenheim has given us hard proof of the soul's immortality. The spirit has been reaffirmed in the face of modern scientific materialism. The work of spiritualism will rouse humanity to a new moral earnestness.
It is a revolutionary movement, and we will turn the empire into a spiritual republic.
Uhl sighs. Leopold takes a drug injection in his hand.
Why must I be bothered with a magician?
He's proving to be more than a magician, Your Highness.
He's a charlatan, he's a faker. He pretends to have supernatural powers.
Leopold sucks on the vein.
Put him on trial for fraud.
First we have to show it is fraud.
Uhl watches as a film projectionist tries to emulate the illusion in a dark room.
This is...
They stare at a flickering figure on a wall. Uhl and his sidekick exchange a frustrated glance.
Yes, I see. Not bad, not bad. We need a spy in Eisenheim's troupe.
Those Orientals, they won't give us anything.
Uhl storms off. It's late at night. The other detective picks the lock on the theatre door. He gets inside the theatre and holds a lighted candle to pierce the darkness of the auditorium as he glances around. Figures creep up behind him. He turns at the last moment. He's grabbed and thrown out onto the pavement. He stares up from the pavement at a chubby Oriental man who locks the door. Later, Eisenheim gives another performance. Uhl walks along a raised pavement nearby with his pipe in his mouth. A man in a cap runs past him. The inspector sees a small crowd has gathered on the cobbled street ahead.
Happened here?
One of those ghosts from the theatre down the street.
Yes.
Where?
There. Right there.
He crosses to an emotional woman.
Yes.
Sick.
Where is this thing?
Right there.
Did you see it?
The inspector enters the theatre. Eisenheim sits on his chair on stage. A boy sits close by. The manifestation of another little boy walks through the stalls. A man touches him, and his hand passes straight through. The little boy stares at the inspector, clearly unnerving him as he walks past. Next, amid an outcry from the packed theatre, Uhl and his team of uniformed officers move in to arrest Eisenheim. The magician looks calm and composed as he's led to the inspector's office.
I want to know how it's done.
First the orange tree, now this. Do I have to share all my professional secrets with the police?
Well, in this case, yes, or I'll be forced to arrest you.
On what charge?
Well, we'll start with fraud.
Excuse me, Chief Inspector.
What?
I think you should.
Uhl crosses to a balcony window and stares down into the street, where a crowd of people stare up at him.
Who are they?
They're here for him.
Ah. My goodness, you have a devoted following. What is it they expect of you?
I have no idea. What do your spies tell you?
And you plan to subvert the monarchy, perhaps?
Why? Just because the Crown Prince is a murderer?
He's not a murderer. We have the real murderer in prison. He pleaded guilty.
You've got the wrong man.
You don't know that.
No, but you do.
Eisenheim, you will also go to prison if you don't explain to me what it is you are doing. The sentence will be greater if that mob attacks the building.
They lock eyes. Eisenheim gets to his feet. He steps onto the balcony.
Stop! Stop!
Listen to me, please! You must listen to me, please! Thank you all for coming. I have been speaking with the Chief Inspector, and I think there's been a serious misunderstanding. I want you all to know that everything that you have seen in my theatre is an illusion. It's a trick. It's not real. I can't bring loved ones back from the grave. I can't receive messages from the other side. I apologize if I've given you any false hope. My intention has only been to entertain. Nothing more. Now, I appreciate your support, but you must go home.
They look downcast and start dispersing.
Please, you must go.
He goes back into the office. The inspector looks at him, not sure what to do or say.
There, now I've explained it, so it can't be fraud.
With a face filled with confusion, Uhl raises his eyebrows and indicates the door. Uhl's sidekick opens it for Eisenheim. Later, Uhl has an audience in the royal palace with Crown Prince Leopold, who looks grave.
Has he tricked you? Is that it?
No, Your Highness.
And why are you failing me? I thought I could trust you. I thought you were a man I could bring with me when I took the throne. Am I wrong about you?
No, you're not wrong, Your Highness, no.
I need men who can complete the tasks assigned to them! Instead, I'm surrounded by fools. In the end, I must do everything myself.
All bows as Leopold gets from his seat. A horse-drawn carriage leaves from outside the palace gates. Inside, the crown prince sits in a cloth cap and commoner's clothes. He turns to Ul.
How do I look?
Leopold puts on a pair of specs.
Very ordinary.
I think I'm going to enjoy this.
The carriage halts outside the theatre where a detective waits. Ul gets out, followed by the crown prince. There's no reaction from the people who mill around.
They don't recognize you.
What? And keep your distance. I don't want to be seen with a policeman.
Eisenheim, with a black waistcoat over his tieless white shirt, comes onto the stage. An Oriental man watches from the wings without expression. The illusionist takes his customary seat at the center of the stage. Leopold watches him ardently. Eisenheim stretches out the palm of his hand. His fingers tremble as a mist starts to form in front of him. The inspector stares wide-eyed as the mist takes on the form of a woman. Eisenheim's arm sinks down as though drained of supernatural energy. He stares with glassy eyes at the woman he has created. She turns to him. It's Sophie.
Who are you?
Are you Duchess von Teschen?
Yes.
What's happened to you? She was murdered. Were you murdered? By who?
Did they arrest the right man?
Tell us, please. Who murdered you?
Someone. Here.
Tell us, point him out. Was it the Crown Prince?
He's killed the woman before!
Okay. The Crown Prince isn't even here.
Eisenheim holds out his hand with a beseeching look to the woman he loves. She tries to grip his hand, but she fades away. Eisenheim bows his head in despair. Ul looks on in a quandary as the green curtains close.
Chief Inspector, are you sure you have the right man?
Quite sure, excuse me.
Did you investigate the Crown Prince? He cannot continue if this is true. He must be brought to justice.
It's not true. A magic trick is not evidence. What is your name?
I don't see how that
rides with Leopold back to the palace.
That actress didn't even look like Sophie. But the audience is stupid and knows it. He manipulates them. He himself said nothing. His actress said nothing inflammatory. He left it to the audience to make their accusations. All plans paid for by him, of course. And I suppose you made a note of those people?
I'm afraid we didn't have enough men tonight.
At the next performance, I want them all arrested. Every one of them. Eisenheim, the whole troupe. I want an example.
The next day.
Made of him. In front of all his followers.
That was very foolish last night. No. You can't destroy him, you know. You can't bring down the monarchy.
Oh, I know I can't.
Then don't raise her again. Don't provoke those questions. Eisenheim, I don't want to arrest you. I'm a cynical man, God knows. But if your manifestations are somehow real,
then even I'm willing to admit you're a very special person. And if it's a trick, then it's equally impressive. Either way, you have a gift. So don't make me put you in jail. Promise me you won't do it again.
I promise you, you'll enjoy this next show.
What do you want?
Nothing.
Then why bring her back?
Just to be with her.
For the next performance, lines of police are on duty. Ool strides to the chief officer.
Is ready?
Yes, sir. We're trying to assess how he might escape.
As uniformed police surround the theatre, Eisenhower meets with his former manager, Joseph.
I want to apologize to you for my behavior of late, but I want to make it up to you if you'll listen to a proposition.
Well, I don't know.
I'll make it worth your while, Joseph.
You know, I'm very busy right now.
He picks up an envelope.
I haven't just been sitting around waiting for you.
No, of course. I want you to assume control of all my finances and my assets. Everything.
Everything?
Yes. Including this theater and Joseph all the receipts of tonight's performance, which I offer with my sincere thanks. What do you say?
All right. I'll do it.
Good. Good.
Would you like me to introduce you tonight?
He pats Joseph on the back.
Tonight, just enjoy the show.
It's a packed house again, and a packed police presence. Looking a little apprehensive, Joseph brushes through a police line to talk to Ool.
Excuse me, Chief Inspector. I'm Joseph Fisher, Eisenheim's manager.
Yes, I remember.
What's going on? Why are the police?
Precautions, Fisher, precautions.
Are you planning to arrest Eisenhower?
The curtains sweep open. The chair stands at center stage. The lanterns burn at the front of the stage. Eisenheim sits in the chair. His eyes look red and tired and weary as he gazes into the audience. The audience stare back at him, expectantly and apprehensively. Ool is there again and looks uneasy. With his palm outstretched, Eisenheim manifests Sophie onto the stage once more.
It's Duchess Fantasia.
Why were you murdered?
I was leaving him.
Leaving who?
The Crown Prince.
I tried to get away. I was wearing my locket when I died, but now it's gone. It's lost.
Tell us, please, who murdered you?
Was it the Crown Prince?
We must do something!
A questioner is plucked from the audience and bundled away by police. The inspector climbs onto the stage. Police form a line at the foot of the stage.
To the front! Step up!
In the name of His Imperial Majesty and the city of Vienna, I hereby arrest Eduard Abramovitz, also known as Eisenheim the Illusionist, on charges of disturbing public order, charlatanism, and threats against the Empire.
Ool stares in astonishment as the image of Sophie vanishes. Ool reaches out to seize Eisenheim, but his hand goes right through him, like he's trying to grab a hologram. Police hold back a stunned crowd who are trying to reach the stage. Eisenheim gets up from his chair. A police sword is held at his neck. He walks straight through it. The audience and the police officers stare in utter disbelief as the illusionist becomes just another illusion and starts to vanish until there's nothing left of him. The inspector yells at his sidekick. Joseph sinks back into his seat, looking as astonished as all the others. Ul marches up to one of the Orientals who is being held in a neck lock.
Where is he?
He was right there.
How is this trick done?
Police swarm throughout the building.
How is it done?
I don't know.
They smash open a door. More police travel in horse-drawn carriages to Heisenheim's home in the country. The inspector leaps from the lead carriage, his eyes glinting like steel. With a determined stride, he marches into Heisenheim's workshop. While the uniformed officers search the premises, he looks around, taking in everything. He sighs. He spots the small bottle of red liquid on a desk. He picks it up and studies it. He puts it down when he sees a folder marked Orange Tree. He picks this up enthusiastically and opens it. Inside, he sees a fading parchment with diagrams of the locket. He discards the folder and thinks, looking increasingly frustrated. A sense of realization sweeps over his face, and he goes back to the diagram of the locket. He studies it more carefully, and his eyes widen. Next, a carriage takes him to the Royal Hunting Lodge. He jumps out into the cobbled courtyard and heads for the stable block, which is in darkness. He strikes a match and lights a lantern. He takes the lantern into one of the stable blocks, where he thought he saw something on his last visit. He searches through the straw on the floor. He fiddles with it and eventually slides it open to reveal a photograph of Heisenheim as a teenager. The tiny photograph drops into the straw. He stares down and spots, just to the left of where it landed, a green gem, partially buried. He picks up the gem and holds it between his thumb and forefinger. It glints in the light of the lantern. The courtier comes down steps and hands the inspector the Crown Prince's sword. He looks a little disgruntled to be asked to do so. Ul stares at the sheath containing the sword, giving nothing away. Then he raises his eyes to the courtier, who takes the hint and leaves. Ul sees a gemstone is missing from the sword. He places in the gap the one he found in the stable. It fits, and he winces at what he has discovered. He takes the evidence to his waiting carriage.
I had my driver take the sword to police headquarters. My men will examine it and see if it matches the
Leopold's office.
Found on Duchess von Teschen's body. I have no doubt that it will. After that, I came in here, and you asked me why I was late.
If St.
stolen Imperial property.
That seems trivial compared with murder.
Even if that were true, you have no jurisdiction here.
Well, that's right. You may do as you wish here without consequence. Nobody can punish you. Except one man.
Who's that?
The Emperor. I don't suppose he'll leave his crown to a murderer, do you?
He'll never believe you.
Maybe not.
But I wrote a letter to his general staff, telling them everything.
Including your plan to overthrow the Emperor. I know they'll listen to that. You'll not take the throne, not with my help.
You no longer want to be chief of police. Baron Vienna, you don't want to be a baron, an aristocrat?
Leopold gets to his feet, a little unsteadily.
At this point.
You fool. He's tricking you. He's manipulating you. He had the sword at the command performance. He could have pried the stones loose then and planted them here. He's planted everywhere.
You're drunk.
It's all a trick. It's an illusion.
Leopold extends a finger indicating, give me a minute, and strides into the adjoining drawing room. He gets a handgun from a drawer and points it at the inspector.
You need to wire your driver and have the sword returned.
Or what?
I'll shoot you. First I'll shoot you anyway.
And then you'll have killed the police inspector and the Duchess.
Or perhaps we'll kill you, sir.
Hool cocks his head to one side, listening. Leopold glances out of the window and sees soldiers on horseback approaching. Keeping the gun trained on Hool, he crosses to the window.
Some officers of the general staff, I'd guess. They must have received my letter.
What do you want?
I don't want anything.
Fine.
The officers, about a dozen of them, ride into the courtyard. The courtier tries to stop them entering the lodge.
Gentlemen,
the situation is so obvious. Everyone's completely incompetent. My father runs the Empire into the ground. No one notices, no one does anything about it. I propose to clean up the mess and you thank me by betraying me. Well, you're all becoming irrelevant. You'll be replaced. The country will be run by mongrels. There's a thousand different voices screaming to be heard and nothing will be done. Nothing. I've done everything I can. Too much. Far too much.
By your father's authority, I insist you open the door. You must open the door.
You're a fool.
Leopold trains the gun on himself.
Please, your highness.
I can't stand it. You won't stand it.
Break down the door. Break it down. What happened?
Hool slumps into a chair looking shaken. Later, he's escorted by two officers in imperialistic uniform from the palace grounds to the heavy gates where sentries stand on duty. Outside the palace, he takes Sophie's locket from his pocket and stares at it thoughtfully before placing it back. He heads off along the street. A little boy holding a brown parcel runs up and taps him. As he stops, a man with a bushy red beard bumps into him. Hool looks down at the little boy. The boy hands him the parcel and scoots off. He opens it, and a look of shock sweeps his face. It contains the file marked Orange Tree. Hool quickly turns the pages inside. There's diagram after diagram revealing the full secrets of Heisenheim's Orange Tree trick.
You! Who gave you this? Who gave you this?
Herr Eisenheim!
The boy runs off along the cobbled street.
Where?
Ul urgently sticks his hand into the pocket where he put the locket. The pocket is empty. He bares his teeth with a look of astonishment and admiration. He glances around. In the distance, he spots the back of Redbeard, who bumped into him. He wears a tweed overcoat and carries a cane and a briefcase. Ul starts a frantic dash across the road, but has to pull himself back as a horse-drawn carriage trundles past. But then he chases at full pelt. Redbeard dangles the locket from his hand as he walks. Ul runs along the pavement, brushing past soberly dressed men in dark hats and long coats, women in a variety of hats and dresses down to the floor. Redbeard increases his pace. He plucks a pocket watch from his waistcoat and checks the time. He clicks it shut and quickens his pace even more. He's almost running as he passes a workman stacking sacks onto a horse-drawn wagon. Ul is running. He crosses under a stone bridge, still gripping the orange tree file. He stares to where the workman is stacking sacks and runs on, but he's lost sight of Redbeard, who's arrived at the train station. Redbeard glances along the platform and then boards the steam train. As the train is pulling out, Ul races onto the platform. He mutters angrily to himself, trying to figure out how he was duped. He remembers the conversation he overheard at the train station earlier and conjures up flashbacks as he tries to make sense of it all.
When it's done, you'll travel ahead with her and I shall follow.
And she understands everything this entails?
Completely.
Do you think Eisenheim's behind all this?
So what does it mean to die?
What do you want?
To be with her. Chief Inspector, there's one thing you should know.
Your sword is very beautiful.
Sophie pours a chemical into Leopold's drink. Leopold staggers after her as she goes to the stable. He appears drunk, but is drugged as well. As Leopold collapses in the stable, Sophie pours red blood-like liquid over his sword. She drops her locket and climbs onto her horse and deliberately slumps down.
Everything you have seen is an illusion. It's a trick.
Eisenheim and Sophie kiss and hug. Ul removes his hat and smiles broadly at the sheer cheek and ingenuity of it all. He nods his head in understanding. Eisenheim presses something into Sophie's hand. She opens her palm, revealing the wooden locket. Two butterflies flutter up to the sky. The end.